You're listening to Mentoring Developers, episode number 7.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi there. Today I'll be talking to Divya and Casey. They are apprentices at Sparkbox. If you remember from episode 6, mentoringdevelopers.com/episode 6, I was talking to Ryan Cromwell, who is a mentor and a senior developer at Sparkbox. And I wanted to bring some of his apprentices and some of the new developers that work in their company and talk about their experiences and ask them from their point of view what it's like to be an apprentice at a company that has a structured mentorship program, and talk about and listen to their stories and learn from them whether this arrangement is working out for them and how they are in their career. And hopefully it will be an inspiration for new and aspiring developers. And if you're a senior developer, perhaps you can look at it as a model that you can apply in your own company or your organization if you are looking for new developers, you're hiring new developers. I think everybody can benefit. I certainly benefit from talking to these wonderful ladies. I think we need to encourage more women to come into programming, and I would love for you to listen to this interview and give me your feedback, give me your ratings on iTunes. I look forward to that. And if you have any questions, please feel free to send me a tweet at mentoringdevs, mentoringdevs on Twitter. And now, here are my guests, Divya and Casey. Hi, Casey. Hi, Divya.
Hello.
Hello.
It's really exciting to have you guys here, especially since I interviewed Ryan Cromwell, who is one of the people that is mentoring you. And he's a good friend of mine. And I know that you are part of this amazing apprenticeship program that I really want people to know about. But first, I want to know a little bit about yourself, about you guys. So, Divya.
Yep.
Who are you? How do you define yourself?
I am a front-end developer as of 2 years ago. And I started out, I guess officially 2 years ago, but I was doing a lot of freelance stuff while I was in college, and I never really saw it as a way for me, as a career option. And so I kind of realized it like towards the end of my college that I could make a career out of it. And then I tried to kind of figure out, okay, what are different outlets that I can use in order to get an in into the industry without having a computer science background? Because there's always an expectation when you get into like the software field that you have that experience. And so without that experience, it kind of is challenging because people expect you to have the basics, and you might not have, you know, like algorithms or data structures or an understanding of pure understanding of Java, Scala, whatever. And so I was attending a lot of web events at the moment. And so I came across Sparkbox and their apprenticeship program. And so I applied, and then that's how I kind of got roped into the apprenticeship. And then that turned into a full-time job. So that's kind of how I got into the field, I guess.
That's all good. I think that what I wanted to know was how you define yourself. And I think you're currently defining yourself as a, can I say that you consider yourself a web developer? What are you?
I think I consider myself as a web developer and like overall just generally curious about the world and learning new things. And I'm generally very, like, I love everything about the web and like learning about new web technologies and you know, listening to podcasts and going to meetups and stuff like that, because I think the web community is very engaging and opening. And yeah,
what I wanted to do, what I want to do is talk to you later about how you got into it, because I'm really interested in what got you interested in this to begin with, because it looks like you weren't, you know, all, you know, when you were a kid, you probably wasn't thinking about becoming a developer, but let's leave that for later. I want to get to Casey. Casey, you work with Divya. How do you define yourself?
Well, I also am a web developer. My background originally was in front-end development and design. But then when I discovered Sparkbox and their apprenticeship, I had wanted to get more into back-end development, specifically with Ruby. And so now, after the apprenticeship is over, I mostly work with Rails.
Okay. And I know that from your website, you have a fantastic website, by the way. You're doing a lot of things. I see a lot of pictures on Instagram. I see some food items and recipes, I suppose. And
oh, yes. I love food.
SVGs. I saw SVGs. I was like, this girl is doing a lot of different things. It's not just Rails.
Oh, no. I love all parts of the web development process. I have a hard time picking. If I do one thing for too long, I get bored and I want to go and, you know, maybe play around with front-end development or animate some SVGs.
Do you remember your first encounter with programming?
Oh, yes. It was Neopets. I can't remember if it was middle school or high school, but I don't know if you remember the Neopets website where you could have like a virtual pet. You could also have a page for your pet where you could build a custom page. And they had a tutorial that taught HTML. And in fact, they have that exact same tutorial, outdated and everything, on the website still. But that was actually my first introduction to development.
Okay. And what kept you going with it?
Honestly, I stopped after that. And then in college, I took an HTML class. I had a couple semesters where I couldn't figure out what I wanted to do as a career. And I took HTML and I was like, oh, I remember this. And I picked it up and ran with it from there.
Awesome. What about you, Divya? How did you start? What was your first experience with programming?
I think my experience like with programming was kind of abstract in a sense, because like my introduction to it was more from like the logic side of things and like how, because I took philosophy in high school, and then I didn't realize the correlation between computer science and philosophy, just because like I didn't see the two come together. And so when, as I was building, So I guess I was moving, like I started out doing a lot more web design stuff from a WordPress perspective. And then that moved more into like learning PHP and like, you know, touching the CSS and stuff like that. And then that led to me understanding like that there's more to web design or web development than I assumed. And then that led to an exploration in a sense that kind of led me to the apprenticeship, which led me to Sparkbox. And yeah.
So both of you girls, I get confused with guys and girls. Both of you started web development, and I'm curious to see why did you want it? What was your motivation? You're doing something else, right? At some point you were happy. Why pick up this new thing?
I
guess like being, at least for me, it was just a matter of like earning money. And as, like, I think I encountered it just because one person was like, oh, can you help me build this website? Because you're young and you probably know more about technology than I do. And so that kind of led me to learning about building websites. And I had done web stuff before, but using Flash when I was in middle school. So I didn't really consider that web development. But in a sense, like, that kind of spurred, like, I guess a utilitarian motivation became an actual interest, which became a passion. So.
And how long did that take for that to become a passion?
I think honestly, I don't think there was a timeline specific to it. I think it took, like, time, because it was kind of like, oh, this is interesting, and then moving away to, like, other things, and then coming back to it, and then moving away and coming back to it. And so I don't know exactly when it became a passion. I guess, I maybe could say, like, 3 or 4 years ago when I went to a WordPress camp, and then was in the front-end development track, and then kind of was like, oh, this is really interesting, and I want to learn more about this. And so that kind of led me into diving deeper into the subject and taking computer science classes in college.
Well, I'm glad you guys did, because we really need people like you. We need more women in programming. So, but my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that neither of you went to college for computer science specifically, or computer engineering.
Yep.
I went to school for web design, which had a little bit of, like, HTML and CSS, but nothing beyond that. Associate's degree kind of thing.
Yeah. So now that you found Sparkbox, and Sparkbox has this amazing internship program, 6 months long, and they take in people with, I'm assuming they take in people with no experience, or do they require some experience?
They require some experience, just so that you can, it allows them to build on a foundation that already exists, rather than having to teach you to think like a software developer, so that you can just build on, like, understanding syntax and maybe certain concepts that you might not have already gotten.
So you need to be somewhat familiar with, you may have done some websites, maybe they ask mm-hmm. you to have some kind of portfolio where they can see that you have the aptitude. And I think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then, but I went through the curriculum on GitHub, that I think I found it mm-hmm. through Casey's GitHub profile. And is that pretty accurate, the way it is being done, Casey?
Yeah. It's, I guess you could say it's followed to it. The curriculum is followed to a T for, like, the first, you know, half of it. And then it starts to get a little bit more looser. You know, you can follow the curriculum, or you can kind of branch off and do your own thing. So it's pretty flexible.
Okay. So from the point of view of somebody who likes to mentor, like, I've done this, I've created curriculums, I have run mentorship programs before. It's always a struggle, because you have to balance the impulse to get people working on a project immediately, because real world experience, I mean, beat working in a real project with real deadlines and learning through that. You can't beat that. On the other hand, people are not prepared for that, and they don't have necessarily the tools. So then this other type of internship or apprenticeship program comes up, where we teach them in a classroom environment. And based on what I've noticed in the apprenticeship curriculum, a lot of this training is done through code school. So it's probably through your own, like, you just go and do it on your own, but it's not classroom based teaching. Am I correct in this?
Yeah.
So yeah. Nobody's like, you don't have to sit in a class and somebody's on a whiteboard and teaching you concept. That never happened.
There were a few times where, when they would introduce something new, where we'd get together, you know, and we would have a whiteboard and they'd introduce it, and then we'd talk about it. But then afterwards, you know, we'd go out and experiment with it or play around on Code School. So there's a little bit of that, but it wasn't every day. It was maybe like once a week for an hour.
6 months seems like a long time for an apprenticeship program. I've never seen a 6 month long apprenticeship program. I'm really curious. Do you work on projects that, because Sparkbox is a consulting company, so it has clients and it has client projects, billable projects. Do you work on those, or do you just work on pet projects or these group projects that are done for the class itself?
The focus of the apprenticeship is, so they structured it such that you don't touch client projects, because the understanding is that you should be learning and that there shouldn't be any constraints in terms of you fitting in deadlines or stuff like that. So that's the reason why we don't touch client work. And we're more focused on like going through the curriculum and learning at our own pace and working on pet projects or projects that are assigned to us so that we can learn things and kind of get experience with it and get mentored through those projects without having to have like billable hours associated with it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because you really don't want to jeopardize client projects, and it's a lot of stress that we can avoid. And I really appreciate Sparkbox doing that, because the impulse for a consulting company like Sparkbox would be to just put everybody on a billable project to start making money. But I think this was really good. What was interesting, something that I'm trying to understand from the apprenticeships GitHub project, is that most of these items that are listed, they're struck out, or they have been canceled. Is that, for example, that it says Code School, try Git, but it's crossed out?
You're probably viewing my cloned version. So what we did is we would each clone, the apprentices would each clone the repo. And then as we completed something, we would cross it out.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Okay, so you all these different Code School exercises. I mean, Code School is fantastic, personally, because it lets you type in and do some interactive stuff. It's not that realistic, but it gives you a taste of the syntax and how things work. Is that, what's your understanding of it?
Of Code School? I like Code School. It's nice. The video, you know, format, I found myself like really zoning out through a lot of the videos. I just wanted to jump in and start practicing things, but then I'd have to go back and find it in the video because I didn't actually pay attention. For me personally, it's not the best learning format, but I know a lot of people really do well with it.
And you're saying the videos are pretty long and you tune out, and I can completely understand that. But there's the other part of it where you type in things. They give you exercises, things that you need to solve. I find that to be sometimes you need to satisfy the compiler more.
Yes. Yes, totally. I think it's definitely like, it allows you the quick and dirt, like it gives you a quick way of set, like a quick sandbox environment for you to start working on, you know, if you're learning Ember, if you're learning Rails, without having you to set up the environment for it. So it's quick and it's great. But the caveat definitely is that, you should be understanding when you're learning these things, also the environment that it lives in, because the error handling for Code School might not be, you're ultimately, like what you said, satisfying the compiler. So the error messages might not be as descriptive or as useful to you if you are working in an actual environment that you set up yourself. So in that sense, I would say like Code School is a great starting point. But it's also, especially for a junior developer, someone who's getting into it, it's like, you almost have to pry yourself away from Code School as soon as you can, and as soon as you feel comfortable with the syntax, and then start setting up your own environment and working within that, because then you're able to make changes and like work on that part of it rather than depending on Code School for that.
No, that's excellent, because here's my point of view. But I thought somebody started DJing over there with some. did you hear that sound?
Yeah, I'm not sure what that was.
Okay, that sounded like somebody spinning the desk. I was like, "Oh, that's good. We're partying." So if you had to give advice, and this is, I'm jumping it a little bit, jumping the gun a little bit, because I generally ask this question at the end, but if you wanted to give an advice to Sparkbox to, let's say, make an improvement, anything, everything can use an improvement, would be to cut down on the code school tasks. Will that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I think that not relying so heavily on code school would be nice. Or maybe even introducing some other, I know Code Academy, they have a little bit more of a different format where instead of video, they instruct you while you have the editor up. I mean, it's learning the same thing, but with a different format. So introducing other places, not just code school, that would be handy.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So, and that's good because the code school environment is really sandboxed and you can't really do everything. And if you had your own environment set up, then you would be able to do things maybe just a little bit out of the box and have fun with it and do something a little bit differently. And it will still work because it will be the real compiler or the real interpreter. But the problem is then they have to have somebody who checks your, you know, output all the time. And that's why I think people use Code School, because they feel like people can be on autopilot. But what we're saying, mm-hmm. and I think all of us, we agree on this, is that it doesn't really work as, you know, in as we would expect it to.
Yep.
So now you in software development and you are learning things and you're learning, I know the number of things you had to learn. I mean, I don't envy the situation of a new software developer these days coming out, and now they have to learn, because now I know that you're learning Ruby, and I know that in Sparkbox they use Ember, which is not Ruby. Okay, this is a whole another layer of concepts and technologies in addition to HTML, CSS, JavaScript. You can't run away from JavaScript. And that's just the starting point. And I know that, you know, you guys are interested in other things. Casey, you're doing SVG, which is, I mean, I'm scared of it, you know. I know it's something awesome, and I know that I should probably learn it. But my physical brain, I think, is going to explode if I put more technologies in it, right? I have to take something out to put something in. So mm-hmm. I don't envy your situation of having to learn all of those really different things. And then try to be good at, you know, good at all of them. Do you think that's even possible? Do you think that you should perhaps?
When I graduated from college and I got my first job, there was.
Let us know how we are doing by tweeting at us at Mentoring Devs. And if you are enjoying the show, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Now let's get back to the show.
About, you know, the basics, but I didn't know about all these other languages, and I was incredibly overwhelmed. I mean, to the point where I almost wanted to give up before I even got started.
So what kept you going?
My coworkers, actually, I think they could sense my frustration with not knowing where to go, what to continue learning. And they just, like, you know, pick what you need at the moment and go with that. Ignore the rest of it. You know, just, you know, it's there, but you don't need to know it right now. And that helped. It gave me something to focus on. So maybe I don't know every single language that's out there, but I know what I need to know to get the job done.
And that's a very good approach. That will keep you sane, because you can't learn everything about everything. And obviously that's true. But even the thing that you're focusing on, if you want to be a Rails developer, you certainly don't need to know everything about Rails, right? Right?
Okay. Oh, yeah.
And that's true. But gonna ask Divya, do you ever feel like you need to be an expert in something? Like, yes, I can't learn everything about everything, but there's this one thing that I should be pretty good at. I should be way above average, and people should come to me when they're stuck in that thing. Do you ever think that?
I do, actually, but that thing changes constantly. And in some sense, like, what I find when I first started out was just the sense of, like what Casey was saying, to echo that, just the sense of overwhelming feeling that you get when you're like, I have to learn this and that, and there's this technology and this framework and this build system and this editor that I have to use, and it's almost like mind-boggling to kind of figure out where I should start. But I think one thing for me has been not, I think it's very superficial for you to be like, I want to be an expert at one thing in some sense, because as a beginning software developer, and this is something I've heard multiple like experienced developers and mentors say, is that as a junior developer, you shouldn't be focusing on one thing, and you should be broadening your knowledge at the beginning and then deepening that knowledge over time. So in some sense, I would say what helps me is understanding basic concepts of how a language works, like loops and various methods and functions that I can use for certain things, just like basic concepts that I can replicate in various scenarios to help me find answers to things. And alongside that, because like looking at a broad sense of the field, what is highly valued that I see a lot is the ability to learn things quickly, because the frameworks change constantly and the build systems change constantly. You have to learn like Grunt today and Gulp tomorrow, and then there's like Backbone and Angular, and then there's Ember now, and there's, it's constantly changing. So for you to be chasing frameworks and chasing technologies is not going to get you very far. So in some sense, like for me, what helped is just kind of try to stay sane, just understanding like, okay, there's certain things and holes in my knowledge, so let me go fill those things. And it tends to be like overall general concepts rather than specific things.
Okay, so you don't want to focus on a particular framework, and you think that general concepts will take you far, and I think that's a great approach. But I wonder sometimes, you know, you want to be a front-end developer, I'm assuming. Is that a fair statement? You guys want to be front-end developers?
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about front-end development, you alluded to all these different frameworks, Backbone and Ember and Angular and React and mm-hmm. others. There are others and there will be others, and mm-hmm. and they require different set of skills. I shouldn't say skills, but they require different pieces of things that you need to put in your head, right?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps different tools, and it's not easy for everyone. Maybe it's easy for some people, but I think most of us struggle with switching between.
Yeah, I agree. And in some sense, like, I guess I can draw from a personal example here, but at work, I'm using Knockout.js, which is a model view model framework. And it's not necessarily like, it's not one of the super popular frameworks like React and Ember that everyone's talking about, but there are concepts that I use in Knockout that are replicable, like the concept of components that I can replicate in Ember, and it helps in my understanding and learning of that technology. So say I did not, like, I wasn't writing in a framework at all, then I would have zero understanding of how a framework or how an MVC or MVVM works. Then in some sense, it would take me a lot longer to pick something up versus having that base knowledge from which I can work on, and I can probably pick up that framework much faster than someone who doesn't have that basic knowledge.
That's good. And I think that we would hope that people who do get computer science education would learn those, you know, fundamentals, these things that bind all these different frameworks together, the underlying technologies or the concepts, so that when you move from one framework to the other, one programming language to the other, these things don't change and you have a common understanding. Unfortunately, it's not always the case. And people who have computer science degrees like myself, you know, and people who don't, everything seems to even out in the industry after, you know, a mm-hmm. year or two. It almost doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the challenges that you will always have, and we suffer from it, we have to deal with it as senior developers or mentors, but also new developers. And I suspect it's a little bit harder for you guys. How do you keep your skills up to date? Do you even care about that? Is that because there could be a thing, there could be this approach that let's do what we're asked to do and leave it at that. And then if you're asked to learn something, we'll learn it. If otherwise, if a new version of Rails comes out, it's not your concern unless there is a project that you're working on.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Can you hear that
ringing?
Yeah.
That was... somebody was calling me on FaceTime. I had turned my phone off, so my Apple was really helpful and started ringing my computer. Thank you, Apple. Mm-hmm. So, where were we? So I completely lost the train of my thought.
You want to know how we keep our skills up to date? Okay. I try and stay up to date, like, you know, via blogs, and I'm really, really bad about podcasts and paying attention to them. But for me, the best way is just to use my skills. I mean, to go out and do stuff and then to maybe research a better way to do it, or, you know, or Google. Google's, it's about my best friend. So that's my go-to resource if I have any kind of question or need to learn something new.
I find personal projects to be really helpful in learning things that I might not be necessarily doing at work. And as most personal projects go, it ends up in a graveyard or a pile of unfinished projects or things that kind of sort of work, but you don't really want other people to see. And I actually have a Bitbucket. It's like, because I like Bitbucket because it has it's a private repo. So I can commit code that I don't want people to see on there. And it's great because I can think of something that I want to work on. Like this past week, Singapore, which is where I'm from, was doing elections. And so something that I wanted to work on, or I wanted to kind of get more well-versed was understanding how mapping works and visualization works. And so that got me into working with like CartoDB and Mapbox. And that's like completely out of the scope of something I would normally do. But it was a fun project to kind of work on and see how to structure my JSON and how to use the Mapbox API to do exactly what I wanted. It didn't end up as perfect as I wanted it to be, but it was a great exploration into a technology that I would otherwise not use.
Yeah, so you have something that you want to solve, and software, mm-hmm. software gives you the tools, the skills, really the superpower to do the thing that you're really interested in doing. And in doing that, you find out what you need and what they call just-in-time learning. And
yes, exactly.
So do you find blogs to be helpful? Do you listen to podcasts? Do you watch screencasts? What do you guys do?
Yeah, I think like what Casey was talking about earlier in terms of keeping up to date, blog posts and podcasts are great. Like I listen to the JavaScript Jabbers and Ruby Rogues and like a few other podcasts just to like figure out what people in the industry are talking about, and Hacker News as well, which is like what are the hip tech people talking about? That's like kind of a way for me to see what the buzz is about and what people are learning and what people are doing. And then maybe exploring that from that kind of learning about like, oh, someone's talking about functional reactive programming. Let me go look at Bacon.js and like go read the documentation and see if I want to dig into that further. So it's a great way for an exploration into various technologies. Yeah.
Is that a dedicated time that you say you set aside 2 hours, let's say on a Saturday morning, to do this? Or is it just, you know, as it shows up on your inbox?
I've been taking a very ad hoc approach to it. And like I subscribe to a few newsletters that come in my mailbox once a week or once a month. And I read that. And then like, the podcast will come into my podcast manager, and I'll listen to them like while I'm on a run or when I'm walking somewhere to the grocery store or something. And so it's kind of like when I have pockets of time that I would be doing like laundry or something mundane, that I would kind of like listen in and do that. So in some sense, it's kind of, and then in other times it's like, oh, I have an hour before I have to do something else, and then let me go read this blog post or whatever. So I don't think it's like dedicated time. It tends to be very randomized.
Do you ever wonder if people are going to start treating you like a real nerd and like you don't have a life outside of technology? Do you ever fear that you'll turn into me, basically?
Is that bad?
it's very unhealthy, but it's an addiction. I consumed by technology.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because like, so the thing that I used to live in Boston, and Boston is a very busy city, and as of like when you're in the tech scene, it's like pretty much you could go to a meetup every week. You meet tech people in the industry a lot, and people are always talking about the latest and the greatest. And whereas in Dayton, every other person I meet is not in the industry and does something else or is hired at the Air Force Base. And so in some sense, like if I were to close myself in a bubble and just hang out and socialize with Spotbox people, then maybe, but that isn't the case, because every other person I meet is not a software developer. I rock climb with a lot of people who are not software developers, and so I don't think I fear that as much. I don't know, what do you think, Casey?
Well, I've actually have gotten into that. I understand that it's addictive, and I've that's happened to me before, which is probably not the greatest, because I have two young kids and they're pretty high maintenance. So when I'm on the computer all the time, it's really hard on them. So I've had to find ways to incorporate other areas of my life into the web. So like for a pet project, you know, if I want to build a blog about food or kids or something like that, I find that helps me to include my kids more, because then they have to help me in the kitchen and to get these blog posts put together, but then I can still get my time on the computer and be geeky.
So Casey, I have a daughter. I have two daughters. One is 5, and both of them, both of my daughters, one is 1 and one is 5, and they both use computers in their own ways. And they've been using it for years, and they know my little one, my 1-year-old, can, I think she can do a lot of things that we don't even know how to do on our phones, and she would do weird things.
Kids are, it's very interesting comparing my girls and their childhood with technology compared to mine, where I didn't have a computer till I was in high school.
This concludes part 1 of my interview with Casey and Divya. Stay tuned for part 2 in the next episode of Mentoring Developers. Please go to iTunes and give us a rating. It helps us out and spreads the word. Thank you so much for listening.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.